My name is Marcus Antonius. I am a centurion in the Legion of Rome and stationed in the land of Judea. For 25 years, I have faithfully served my emperor. Rising from the lowest ranks, I have become the captain of 100 men in a regiment of 5,000. I have fought more battles than I care to remember in lands such as Persia and Greece and Carthage. My blade has shed the blood of hundreds upon the field of battle. And I have learned to fear nothing and no one. For I have served in one of the mightiest armies that has ever walked the face of the earth. But to be stationed in the land of Judea, my sword has shed the blood of way too many Judeans. And there is no honor in that. For they have no army. They have no force to face in the field of battle. They were simply a pathetic, difficult, and backward country that hadn't the sense to bow down to the throne of Caesar. Other nations, they accepted Caesar's rule. Other people bowed to the authority of Rome, but not these Jews. Not these Jews. We knew it was their religion, their faith in this one holy and righteous God that made their backs like iron and made it impossible for them to bow their knee. Privately, we speculated that we would have to destroy their very temple, for they would never bow before Caesar. They were a harsh and a bitter and unkind people. But to be fair, not all of them were like that. Some were kind to us. Some were good. And most of those were the ones that listened to the teachings and followed the teachings of this rabbi known as Jesus. We Romans laughed about this Jesus. To us, he was nothing more than an itinerant preacher with nothing better to do with his time than to wander around the countryside preaching of peace and of love. And we Romans know that peace only comes at the edge of a sword. And love? Love was something that you purchased. We were men of the world. We understood these things. To us, this Jesus was nothing more than a simpleton and a fool. Lucius, however, he did not agree with us. Lucius was my friend, and he was a fellow centurion. And he told me one of the strangest tales. It seemed that one of his servants became very sick. He was paralyzed and racked with pain. And Lucius was beside himself because this servant was one of his favorite servants. But then he heard about this rabbi who not only preached of love and of peace, but it was rumored that he could heal someone simply by touching them. The crippled were made to walk, the blind to see, and lepers were made whole again. So my friend, he sought out this Jesus, and he finally found him in some dirty backwater town. My servant, he said, is sick and in great pain. Will you come and heal him? And surprisingly enough, Jesus said that he would come at once and heal him. But Lucius, he boldly said, "No, that will not be necessary. I am a man of authority. I say to one man, do this, and to another man, do that, and it's done. You need to only say the word, and my servant will be healed." My friend told me that Jesus looked him in the eyes and marveled. "Never in all of Israel," Jesus supposedly said, "have I ever seen such faith. Return home and it will be done as you have asked." Lucius told me that at that very hour of the day, his servant rose from his bed and was completely healed. Did that really happen? I don't know. I too was a religious man. And in my religion, there were many stories of these great healings and these miraculous happenings, most of which we knew were false. So what do I know? Then one day, I met this Jesus. He had been arrested the night before, and he'd been brought up before the leaders of his people. They accused him of being a heretic. They said that he claimed to be the Son of God. They condemned him to death. But because Judea was under the authority of Rome, they had no authority to execute him legally. So they brought him to Pontius Pilate, who was the governor of the region at that time. They accused Jesus of being a traitor to Rome. They said that he claimed to be the king of Israel and that he challenged the authority of Caesar himself. That was a crime that was worthy of death on a cross. And if Pilate did not crucify this man, then he was no friend of Caesar's. Now I was present. I was in the room when Jesus entered. From the moment that he stepped through the door, I knew something wasn't right. Pilate was a man who was accustomed to sending hundreds of prisoners to their death. I had seen him sentence men to be crucified without even flinching. But as the interrogation proceeded, it became increasingly apparent that Pilate was not judging Jesus, but Jesus was judging him. Now Pilate's unease had only increased when his wife burst into the room and she dragged him off to the side, and in low tones, she warned him not to have anything to do with this religious man because she had had a dream about him in the night. Now Pilate sought to spare Jesus the pain of the cross, and so he instructed me to take him outside to the outer courtyard and to have him flogged. Now flogging, it is a punishment that is usually reserved for the most hardened of criminals. 30, 40, 50 lashes, and a man's skin would hang from his back and his chest. The strips of blood, they would flow from his wounds. One out of every three men died simply from the punishment. When we were finished, my soldiers began to mock him. They put a purple robe on his shoulders and they fashioned a crown of thorns and they jammed it down on his head. "Hail, King of the Jews," they cried. Then they blindfolded him. They spit on him and they struck him. "Prophesy, O Son of God, who was it that struck you?" But he never spoke. He never uttered a word. He stood there as one who still had the authority of a man of power. Now finally, I returned him to Pilate. And Pilate, thinking to gain the sympathy of the crowds, led this man with a terribly beaten body out before them. "What would you have me do with this Jesus who is called the Christ?" he asked. Now the chief priests and the Pharisees were out in the crowd that day, and they began to whisper, and the crowds joined in and crucified him. Eventually, they were crying out, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" And at last, Pilate, even though he was uneasy about this Jesus, he feared the crowds a whole lot more, and he ordered me to take him outside the walls of the city to a place called Golgotha and to put him on a cross. Now, crucifixion, it is one of the most terrible and cruel forms of execution known to man. At one time, Rome required the common soldier to put criminals upon the cross. But they soon discovered that this so demoralized the troops that they finally took to selecting one man to become the executioner. This was normally a man of such great strength that when it came time to pin a man's hands and his feet to the cross, with one blow, he could drive the nails through the flesh and into the wood. Now, Roman soldiers who were assigned to stand guard of those dying on the cross, they would often take to drinking large amounts of a strong drink to help dull their senses and to help them forget. One soldier actually wrote, "Of all the sounds in hell, none is more pitiable than those terrible cries through midnight, where crucified men hang in agony and cannot die while a breath of suffering remains." When men were being nailed to the cross, they would often spit at us. They'd curse us. They would even curse our families. But we all knew that their threats were meaningless. Once a man was placed on the cross and raised up into the sky, they would never come down again, alive. But Jesus was different. He never spat on us. He never cursed us. He never even threatened us. Like a lamb going to the slaughter, he did not open his mouth. At one point during the day, Jesus pushed himself up on his feet that were pinned to the cross. He took air into his lungs and he cried out, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." They know not what they do. Initially, I joined in the mocking and the taunting of Jesus. But then the darkness came. It was noonday, and the sun should have filled the sky. But instead, darkness came down like a curtain, and the crowds, they scurried away. Even my own soldiers began to shrink back from the cross. For 3 hours, darkness came upon the earth. Jesus, he pulled himself up again, and in one last gasp of air, he cried out, "It is finished! It is finished." And then he died. No sooner had he died than the earth began to shake beneath our feet. My men fell to their knees, and I stood there. I looked at the man on the cross, and I said, "Surely this was the Son of God." Now, 3 days later, it was rumored that Jesus rose from the dead. Some of my own men told me that they were there when the earth shook once again beneath their feet. The stone rolled away from the grave, and there was no one to be found within the tomb. Over 500 men were said to have seen this resurrected Jesus. But I was a Roman. I worshipped many gods, and even if this man were actually a god, he would just be one of many others. But I couldn't get the words from my heart and the scenes of that day from my mind. I couldn't shake the fact that I was guilty of this innocent man's blood. I had been the one in authority. I had been the one that ordered his death. Now, it was several years later that I encountered a man with the same name as myself, Mark, a follower of this Jesus, a Christian, he called himself. And I shared with him the experiences that I had had on the day of Jesus' crucifixion. And he told me that Jesus had indeed been the Son of God, but that his death, it had not been an accident, but was instead the very will of God. And that he had died to take away the guilt and the shame of man's sin. "I was guilty," he said, "of Jesus' death, but not because I ordered his execution. It was my sin, my selfishness. It was my arrogance and my pride that put him on the cross and kept him there." And in that moment, I knew what this Christian was telling me was true. And I did what those Jews for so long had failed to do before Caesar. I knelt before this Jesus. I bowed my will to his. I died to the man that I used to be and allowed myself to be buried in the waters of baptism, as he had been buried so many years before. And I rose up from that grave as he rose from his to become a new man. A soldier, now for Jesus Christ. And as we've all gathered here, as you've all gathered here this morning, that's what we celebrate. Some 2,000 years ago, Jesus Christ rose from the grave. He conquered death for each and every one of us. And if you have never, ever accepted him as your Lord and Savior, if you've never bowed before him, today could be that day. What a glorious day it would be if you surrendered your life to him. You see, I was there. I was the one that drove the nails.
I'm the one, I drove the nails. Oh.